And then in terms of, you know, doctors being sheep, I mean, that's the way we're wired to get into medical school. You have to make straight A's. You got to be a well-behaved person. You can't be in trouble. You have to stay in the lanes. You have to be well-liked. You have to be agreeable. And so that's just the way it breeds conformity, our training.
Hey, critical thinkers, welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Here we question the conventional, explore the unconventional, and seek truth in health and wellness. I'm your host, Mike Vera, and today we are speaking with Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, who is really a warrior for truth in the health and wellness space with specific regard to a lot of the stuff going on with the pandemic and mandates and the shots and all that. And many of you, especially those who follow the work of Dr. Jack Cruz, who I talk about in almost every episode, Dr. Bowden actually had a debate. It was with her and Dr. Jack Cruz together on the Danny Jones podcast. And those two were debating Callie Means, who many of you, especially a lot of the health coaches who listen to the show, know that these siblings have been going all around media, on TV, on Tucker Carlson, on Joe Rogan, and they've been giving their take on, you know, the revolution that we need in health, especially around RFK Jr. They've been pushing, really addressing some of the issues with our food. I think that's a good thing, and I've even done that on a previous episode. But Dr. Bowden and Dr. Cruz really are suspicious about their motives, and ultimately, today's episode is kind of an extension of that debate on the Danny Jones podcast. I wanted to hear a little more from Dr. Bowden since, honestly, Dr. Cruz kind of dominated the conversation a little bit. He's very Trumpian in the way he speaks. But let me tell you a little bit more about her credentials and then we'll get right into the episode. So Dr. Mary Talley Bowden is a board-certified otolaryngologist, also known as an ENT, ears, nose, and throat doctor. So board-certified otolaryngologist and sleep medicine specialist. She actually completed her residency at Stanford University. She founded Breathe MD, a cash pay clinic in Houston. She's treated over 6,000 COVID-19 patients with zero deaths, and she's even advocated for early COVID-19 treatments, including ivermectin, which is some of the controversy surrounding her story. And honestly, a lot more. I have like 50 more bullet points in front of me and all the amazing stuff that she's done and parts of her message. But let's just get right into the episode. So without further ado, here we go. I know, you know, very popular on Twitter and in the internet space right now is this bit of contention going on between you and Dr. Jack Cruz, you guys together, really beefing with Callie and Casey Means. I really encourage people to check out that episode on the Danny Jones podcast. But for anyone who maybe didn't hear that yet, would you mind getting us caught up to speed there?
Yeah. So, yeah, Callie and Casey Means have had this meteoric rise, sort of came out of nowhere and came on the scene about 6 months ago, maybe 7 or 8 months ago now. And all of a sudden, we're just all over the place, on Tucker, on Rogan, all over Twitter. If you look at his, at Callie Means' Twitter account, I mean, he had a few, you know, maybe 20,000, and now he's got 200,000 followers. So my antenna were up, and yeah, I tested the waters on Twitter. I said, you know, hey, Callie and Casey, I hope you'll use your influence to call for the COVID shots to be pulled off the market. Didn't get any response, really. His sister, Casey, went to Stanford. Like, I went to Stanford as well, and we were both ENTs. And I reached out to her, very friendly, you know, not confrontational, and just said, hey, you know, I remember residency at Stanford was so rough, and I'm glad to, I'd love to connect with you. And, you know, just friendly sort of banter, got no response. And then Callie kind of pushed back when I called him, you know, called to have him use his influence. He kind of pushed back on that. So, you know, we've all sort of been digging and you go through their ex posts and there's really nothing about the most obvious health crisis and their biggest health crisis in our history or in our recent history. Nothing, no mention of that. And yet, you know, they've got gigantic microphones, which is just odd. And then we find out that the Cali is the person that orchestrated the call between Kennedy and Trump. He's the one that brought them together and prompted Kennedy to drop out of the race. So, you know, he kind of, in this interview, he downplays his influence. But to me, I mean, you've got Trump and Kennedy on speed dial and you can connect them. You've got some influence. You may not want to admit it, but there's something going on, right? And it's so our interview was, I mean, I'm kind of shocked that Cali agreed to go on in her. I mean, which, you know, maybe, and I said this during the interview, I mean, maybe he's an unwitting pawn in the whole thing and not, you know, not knowingly misdirecting. You know, I think it's misdirection. So misdirection is when it's a tactical ploy to, and it's actually a war strategy. And to me, this is, okay, let's look at food. Let's put all our blame on food and ignore the mRNA shots, ignore COVID, ignore what happened during the pandemic. And our public health system is going to, we're going to reform the whole system, but it's all going to center around food, which is just ridiculous. And I know you've been sounding the alarm about food long before they were. And that's another thing I said to Cali. I'm like, this, you're not the first person to come out and say processed food is bad. This is not a new message. You're just somehow able to get that message across and get that message out in the limelight. And we want to know your secrets. So
would you say that was like really the main part of what you were trying to get out of? I don't know if you'd call it a conversation or a debate, but understanding their secrets, or, you know, what were you exactly trying to get out of it? And how do you feel about the results, or, you know, what turned out after the conversation?
Well, I think we got him on record saying that the COVID shot, he's not willing to call for the COVID shots to be pulled off the market, which was exactly what I suspected. Like, he was dancing around that on Twitter, not really willing. You know, he's very skilled in the way he responds and communicates about saying a lot, but not really saying anything. But we were able to get him on camera just to state that he does not believe that should be a policy position to pull the COVID shots off the market. And to me, that's a major litmus test, right? It's a, you know, it may just be one issue, but to me, it speaks volumes. And if you're not willing to state that, then you either don't have critical thinking skills, or there's another motivation for that.
You know, there, as I'm sure you've seen, there have been some mixed reactions to the episode. And I think, you know, on some level, to the average person, that's understandable, because, I mean, Dr. Jack Cruz, who's been on the show twice, by the way, I love the guy, is very harsh in his approach. I think that's off-putting to a lot of people. And even further, a lot of people just, you know, whether it's propaganda, marketing, or just general messaging, a lot of people really do believe food is the big focus that we should all be looking at. I mean, I mentioned to you, I'm a board certified health and wellness coach. Basically, all the people I work with love the memes, siblings. And so I was pretty surprised to see these, you know, I'll say it straightforward, attacks towards the memes. And, you know, on the surface, again, I think it's understandable. But when you really look closer, like you guys are saying, it's a lot like, and Dr. Jack Cruz said this, like a chef brings out food to feed our family and it's all poisoned. And, you know, you and Dr. Jack Cruz are like, hey, what the hell is this? Like, we don't want to eat poison food. This is like, you should face accountability. And Cali and Casey Means are basically saying, oh, well, people can still choose to eat the food. And even further, I think people should listen more to what you guys each are saying about all this, because it's very clear that we're basically being poisoned and they are allowing it to happen. And, you know, maybe he's muddying the waters and trying to distract. It's really frustrating, actually.
Yeah, it's Well, I think there's two key, you know, there's this, it's very safe to say that we should just eliminate mandates. That, and remember, that used to not be very safe. I mean, I got canceled for saying that. And now that's just the fallback. That's easy politically, help, you know, politically very easy to swallow. Eliminating mandates, that's all we have to do. It doesn't offend as many people. And we just need to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until the message that these COVID shots should be pulled off the market is no longer radical. But, you know, you could just argue that Cali is just weak and just, just taking a cowardly position because it's easy. And it doesn't sound like he suffered or, you know, I know Jack thinks his mother died from the COVID shots. I don't think Cali thinks that. But regardless, it doesn't sound like Cali suffered during the pandemic. And it kind of takes a punch in the face for a lot of people. I mean, if I hadn't been punched in the face, I don't know that I would be awake either. So you could just argue that, you know, Cali is the politically safe thing to say. And he didn't really personally suffer that much during the pandemic. So he doesn't get it. That's giving him the benefit of the doubt.
You mentioned there, if you hadn't been punched in the face, you don't know if you would be as awake as you are right now. What exactly does being awake mean to you? Because, I mean, we are here on the Healthy and Awake podcast, so I'm curious.
Well, just, you know, it's basic things that, you know, I used to just assume the flu shot was good, right? The flu shot, you know, benefit outweighs any kind of risk. And I really never dug into it. I just made the assumption, right? Because I was trained that way. I was trained to assume that all vaccines were safe and effective, and to question them was heresy. And now, I mean, I question everything. I mean, I was a little bit skeptical in my field about ENT. Like, I think ENTs are too quick to operate on people for sinus disease. I think sinus disease is inflammatory more than anything. And that's actually what I reached out to Casey Means about, because I agree with her on that. And, you know, most what I'm seeing in my field is just ENTs operating like crazy. You know, patient walks in first visit and they're ready to operate. But in terms of, you know, the vaccines in particular, much more skeptical than I once was. And, you know, cholesterol medications, much more skeptical now. Diet, I mean, you know, I don't know if you've been following me, but I'm on the carnivore diet now and big fan of that. So yeah, my views have changed a lot, and it's because I got punched in the face.
Well, I mean, since you brought up the carnivore diet, I've had Dr. Sean Baker on the show, and I've seen some of your posts talking about it. I know you mentioned you've convinced some people not to take Ozempic and instead to try out the carnivore diet. So, and I've been doing that myself also lately. So I'm just curious, what's your experience been with that lately? And I'd imagine you get some pushback on that too.
It's been, I mean, so the reason I started it was because I went to see my OBGYN about a fibroid, and he's like, well, we can take out the fibroid and do a tummy tuck at the same time. And I was horrified. So I've had four kids, had this little belly since then. Yeah, I've never been like super overweight, but I just had this belly, right, that you just can't get rid of. And you're just told that there's nothing you can do about that. Only thing you can do about that post-pregnancy belly is get a tummy tuck. So I thought, well, Hail Mary, I'll try this carnivore diet. Because I had a good friend who was doing it and constantly pestering me about it. And I was kind of pushing her away. And then I had a patient tell me he had such good results. It's like, well, I'll try it. And I've just been shocked. I mean, I weigh now what I weighed in high school. It's crazy. And I'm not counting calories. And I'm not hungry. And then if I try to dip my toe back into carbohydrates, I feel sick. Like it resets you. It's crazy. And I wasn't a heavy drinker, but I was a pretty regular, you know, like a glass of wine several nights a week. Don't do that. I don't miss it. I mean, I'll still every once in a while socially have something, but it's like night and day. I've just been so surprised by it. So I'm still digging into the research part of it. You know, there's not a lot of research on it, which is surprising to me. But yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. And I think it's, you know, maybe we don't have enough research on it, but it's definitely has to be safer than Ozempic.
What's your steak of choice?
Ribeye.
Nice.
And I love that big hunk of fat. It's like dessert, right? But yeah. I eat it first.
See, I'm the opposite. Like, ribeyes are okay for me, but I love a good filet mignon, and I just drown it in bacon grease. Oh, so that's where I get my fat.
Yeah, I have not tried that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I bring bacon to work every day. That's my snack.
Yep. That's so, as good as it gets.
Yeah.
You've tried the apps, you've signed up for gym memberships, and you've given it your all, yet you're still not where you want to be. What's missing? Accountability and expert guidance. As a board-certified health and wellness coach, I provide the personalized support that you need to finally make real, lasting progress. Making a solid health routine last and stay consistent is hard work, but you don't have to do it alone. Let's work together to turn your health goals into reality. Are you ready to transform? Start your journey at Avantia Health Optimization by clicking the link in the show notes or by going to mikevera.com, where you can try your first session for just $1. Now back to the show. Well, not to jump around here, but you know, we talked about the beef with Callie and Casey Means. Did you happen to see that there was, I don't know if you'd call it a beef, but between Dr. Malone and Dr. Peter McCullough? Dr. Malone posted something criticizing Dr. Peter McCullough. Now, also, Dr. Peter McCullough has been on the show twice. I'm a big fan of him and the work that he does. It just seems like things are really splitting apart here in this MAHA movement, which I know you're also a little skeptical about. So any thoughts on that?
Well, I've tried to stay Switzerland in that dispute, as I like them both. And I can see both sides of the argument, and I'm just trying to stay Switzerland on that.
What is the argument exactly? Because I mean, I just saw one thing. I don't know what the beef exactly is.
I purposely not really dug into it, but it has to do with this theory that Robert Malone is controlled opposition. And I think Peter McCullough somehow insinuated that or said, I don't know exactly, but I do not think Robert Malone is controlled opposition. I'll say that for the record. I have had enough personal interaction with him that I do trust him and have no concerns about that. But I know he's gotten a lot of flack, and I think he's triggered easily by that now because he's gone through so much. He spoke out when very few others would. And you know, it's hard when the people on the same side of the fence are attacking you. I can understand why you'd be sensitive to that.
Yeah, it's really a shame. And it sounds like you saw a different tweet than I did, because I didn't see Peter McCullough, calling Malone possibly controlled opposition. The one I saw was actually from Robert Malone saying, I don't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure it was saying that Peter McCullough is basically a grifter because he sells supplements through the wellness company. And again, I'm bringing this up because it happened. I'm a huge fan of Dr. Peter McCullough and the McCullough Foundation.
But... Well, the feud started years ago, though. That was just a little shot fired. But that the feud started a long time ago.
Wow, that's a shame. Well, I mean, you know, along these lines, the MAHA movement, I saw you posted an article saying is the MAHA movement, I think, a distraction. And so what's your assessment of that overall? Are you optimistic, pessimistic? And what do you think's going to happen?
Yeah, I think the problem is merging Kennedy and Trump is not going to be quite what we had hoped. Now, granted, I don't know that Kennedy would have won. So it's the best that we can do. I just think we have to, and I do think people will continue to be very outspoken about what happens, no matter if it's, even though many of the medical freedom movement people are very strongly loyal to Trump, I still think people will speak out. Now that Trump is safely in office, I think it might embolden people to speak out even more. I think there are a lot of people who are, after this interview with Callie, I had people telling me to be quiet because I was threatening Kennedy's confirmation. And I think a lot of people, same thing with Trump, they maybe weren't as vocal because they were worried if any kind of dissent towards Trump would keep him out of office. But hopefully now, once everybody is securely in place, then we can become very vocal and maybe move the needle.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that you've been talking about how he's kind of changed his message a little bit. I mean, he was very, you know, he wouldn't hold back talking about the vaccines. He wrote The Real Anthony Fauci, which is viciously tearing apart Anthony Fauci and some of what's happened with the vaccines. And now you really don't hear a lot of that. I think it's scaring a lot of people because, you know, we've been sitting back for, what is it, 4 or 5 years now, watching all this unfold. And you for a while have been speaking out the truth, trying to wake people up. And I think all of us collectively have been optimistic. And that's why we put in the effort, right? Like, we're trying to wake people up and get this out there and make change happen. And now there seems to be some doubt cast on all this. I think that's what it comes down to. A lot of people are scared. And add on to all that, now they're trying to push the bird flu again. I just spoke with Nicholas Hulsher from the McCullough Foundation. And it really does seem like, I think Peter Hotez even specifically said January 21st, you're going to start to see new pandemics. I mean,
well, so if you look on the CDC's website about bird flu, they actually say it's low threat level. But we've got, you know, Peter Hotez, Lena Nguyen, is that, you know, that they're just trying to stir the pot. And that's for political reasons, right? It's not because there's an actual threat. They want everybody to be scared of putting RFK as head of HHS. That's all this is. And if you look at, like, I looked at Google Trends to see the buzz about bird flu, it was buzzing right before the presidential primary. And now it's buzzing again. And I guarantee you, this is just their way of trying to, you know, stir up the pot and get people all scared. Oh, we can't put RFK in as HHS.
Going back to Callie and Casey Means, I do think it's really peculiar because at one point during the conversation, he specifically said giving these shots to children is a war crime. And literally under the next breath said that I don't think they should be pulled from the market. I really tried to give him the benefit of the doubt until I heard that. Because, I mean, that just rings up all sorts of alarm bells. I don't even know how to wrap my head around that. I mean, to me, that was the most striking part of the conversation. What about for you? Is there anything that you were just, like, appalled by?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part of that interview was when I asked him, so are you going to get any more shots? No. Are you going to recommend it for your dad? No. Are you going to recommend it for your kid? Absolutely not. I'm like, well, then who needs these shots? Who would you recommend these shots? And then he couldn't answer. And then I said, you know, why are you not getting any more of these shots? What's your hesitation? And he paused. And I said, well, you know, it's because of the safety, right? Because the government is recommending these COVID shots. So if you are not doing what the government says, and you are basically a government official, you owe us an explanation, right? I mean, maybe he's not officially a government official, but, you know, he has a very big microphone. He has a very big influence, and he has got the ear of Trump and Kennedy. And he should make a statement that, you know, is not hypocritical.
Are you familiar with the term fifth generation warfare?
Yes. Yes.
So for anyone who's not, it's basically, it goes beyond conventional warfare where groups of people are shooting at each other with guns and tanks and that sort of thing. And it's now fifth generation warfare that's evolved into this landscape where people, civilians, anywhere, can be attacked heavily through the use of propaganda. And I think one of the reasons that this topic is so heated with the Means siblings is because they very well could be a part of this fifth generation warfare, this propaganda effort to shape the way you think. And it's tough to see that for people who don't think about this sort of thing, because on the surface, they're talking about, oh, transparency. We need more transparency. We need poison out of the foods. I mean, who can disagree with these things? But I think when you really look closer and you know the things that you and Dr. Jack Cruz talk about, how there's basically no doubt that this is a manufactured bioweapon that's deliberately deployed to harm people. And I think when you understand that, really, it's so much easier to you know, look on the other side, like instead of giving them the benefit of the doubt, you know, to go like, what is really your goal here? I mean, it's so clear, like transparency, fine. But like you say, we have the data. We know that this is harming people. It couldn't be more clear. People have been talking about this for years and they're kind of just controlling the Overton window. And it seems to be working. You know, a lot of the health coaches are, they're talking about diet and exercise, and I'm ready to rip my hair out.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping once everybody is safely in place, then people were just, it'll be an explosion of outrage on social media about what's going on. And I personally will be relentless in that. And I think there are people just not being as outspoken as they normally would be just for political reasons.
One of the questions that I had here for you was, why were doctors so obedient during COVID? And, you know, the more we've talked today, I'm wondering if that question is outdated, especially as the bird flu approaches and many doctors are still very much asleep. There seem to be infrastructures, incentive infrastructures in place. I know you posted about Anthem Insurance, which is my, I guess, first, can you talk about that, the Anthem Insurance incentive for vaccinations? Because many people think that's just a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, no, that's good. You know, every insurance company, to my knowledge, does have some sort of incentive program for pediatricians to dole out vaccines. Now, I don't have the specifics on that, but, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, look for, there's a financial incentive, and that's how pediatricians make most of their money, is from vaccines. It's not from seeing sick kids, it's the vaccines. So, and then in terms of, you know, doctors being sheep, I mean, that's the way we're wired. I mean, to get into medical school, you have to make straight A's, you got to be a well-behaved person, you can't be in trouble, you have to stay in the lanes, you have to be well-liked, you have to be agreeable. You know, the people in my class and residency that did the best were the nicest ones. They were the ones that everybody liked. They were very agreeable. They got along very well with everybody. And so that's just the way it breeds conformity, our training. And so it's not all that surprising. And then plus, you know, most doctors are employees now. A majority of doctors have a third party interfering between themselves and their patients. And I'm unique, and I call myself third party free because I don't contract with insurance companies. I don't contract with hospitals. I don't contract with the government. And so the only people I answer to are my patients. And so that gave me an advantage during COVID, that I didn't have a third party whispering in my ear the entire time.
It's very interesting because the way you describe it, if doctors are basically conditioned to be obedient, here you are today really challenging the status quo. So what is it, do you think, that really made you this way? Hey, do you spend a lot of time looking at screens like your phone, the TV, the computer? Well, that can actually lead to some pretty severe disruption in your circadian rhythm, which messes with your sleep, your hormones, your energy, your mood, your clear-headedness. It can actually disrupt quite a bit. Well, Boncharge has life-changing solutions to enhance your well-being and prevent some of those issues. Their blue light blocking glasses, which I'm actually wearing right now, have honestly transformed my life and even the lives of many of the people I work with. I regularly hear how quickly people's sleep improves once they start using these glasses at night. Plus, their red light therapy devices and other wellness products offer cutting-edge health benefits. With the holiday season just around the corner, it's the perfect time to invest in your health or give the gift of wellness to someone special. Right now, there's actually huge discounts during their biggest sale of the year. So click the link in the show notes to shop and support the show, because every purchase helps me keep bringing you great guests and impactful content. What if simply mastering your breath could unlock greater mental clarity, stress resilience, and physical control? Created by Erwan Lacour, who has been on the show twice, Breath hold work is a powerful meditation practice designed to push the limits of your body and mind. This transformative approach has elevated my own mindful practice and helped many of my clients achieve deeper focus and stress relief. Breath hold work offers online courses and live programs to guide you through this empowering journey, no matter your experience level. Ready to tap into your full potential? Check out Breath Hold Work through the link in the show notes. By supporting them, you're also helping the podcast continue to deliver great guests and life-changing content. So please check out the link below. Now back to the show.
Well, I'm not as obedient as other doctors. I wasn't a troublemaker, but I am naturally very independent minded. I always have been, and I'm a little bit hard-headed. And then because of the way my practice was set up, it just all fell into place. I mean, maybe if I had been, locked into the system, things would have gone differently, but I was seeing everything firsthand. And when you see thousands of people with the same disease, I mean, I've never had anything like it in my career where I've had the same problem coming through my doors multiple times a day for years. You become an expert. You just see it all so much. It's just, you can't ignore it. And I really didn't mean to become in the spotlight. I tried to handle it behind closed doors. I went to Houston Methodist because I was collaborating with them. We were doing research. Yeah, I said, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Because I'm seeing all these, breakthrough cases. And
like what? Can you be more specific?
So this was the summer of 2021. It was the third and largest surge of the pandemic. I was testing people. I was using monoclonal antibodies, and I was tracking people. So people who come in for treatment or come in for testing, I was tracking them by their vaccination status. And so what I was seeing is that the vaccinated outnumbered the unvaccinated who were coming in, and they were just as sick, if not sicker. And so I went to Methodist. Methodist was their first hospital in the country to mandate the COVID shots. So they mandated them April 1st, 2021, which is 5 months before Biden. And so we were getting a firsthand look at, do these shots work? And I was seeing that they weren't. And I went to Methodist and I said, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And they basically gaslit me. And they said, I got a one sentence answer saying, well, we believe these shots lower the severity. So I started speaking out on social media, but I didn't really have that many followers. And I think, I'd get like 3 likes on a tweet. And then on this one single day, I tweeted out the same message 25 times. I said, vaccine mandates are wrong. And then I included a screenshot from an email, like a testimonial from a patient saying what they'd gone through these mandates. So that caught their attention. And then that's when they punched me in the face I got a text message from a reporter telling me that my privileges had been suspended, and I didn't hear it from Methodist. I heard it from the Houston Chronicle. And then they went on Twitter and were tweeting that I was spreading dangerous misinformation, harmful to the community. And that's how it all started.
So when you say you saw people getting sicker, even the vaccinated, you're talking about COVID or like ENT related issues?
No, COVID. So I was, gotcha. I just became this COVID treatment center by accident. And so I just started seeing the vaccine where the COVID shots weren't working.
Gotcha. Well, I do have more questions about that, but I'm wondering, because we landed here talking about doctors and their obedience. How do you think we can encourage a culture where doctors are more like you and they do challenge the status quo instead of being obedient while we have this system that really conditions them to be this way?
Well, we need to have some sort of incentives for doctors to become more independent. And that's going to be a slow and hard turn. But the government could do some financial incentives to make it easier to become an independent doctor, because I could be a lot wealthier if I were not independent. I could, I'd make a lot more money if I joined a big practice, and it'd be much easier too. And then, in the medical schools, we need to work on the education. We need to get rid of the DEI. We need, you know, this whole gender transitioning of minors, that was not covered in my training at all. That's just like a new thing that was not part of my training whatsoever. And that's a social disease, not a medical disease. And, you know, cleaning up our educational system. So that's a big problem.
So what advice do you have for current doctors or medical students who are just in the system now?
Stay true to yourself. You know, think about the patient first. You know, it helps if you've been a patient as a doctor. I think I had 4 kids in 5 years, and that taught me a lot because I was on the other side of things. And that sort of inspired me to become independent. Like I wasn't working for a while because of my children. And when I went back, I decided I'm going to do it in a much more patient-friendly way. And so I think it's harder when you're a young doctor and you really haven't been through the system as a patient. You don't understand what it's like. But yeah, it's hard. I don't know if I want any of my children to go into medicine.
Yeah, my dad's a medical doctor, and just seeing the stress that's involved and the bureaucracy and just the systemic corruption that we've been talking about today. I've been much more, I think, productive and comfortable as a health coach here because I kind of get to work outside the system and challenge it a little bit. But how about advice for patients? I asked you about advice for doctors, but patients want to trust their doctors. A lot of them are confused in the midst of this information warfare. What advice do you have for them?
So get yourself healthy. Lose weight if you need to lose weight, manage your stress, sleep, exercise, you know, do everything you have the power to do to stay healthy so you don't have to get near a doctor's office. That's first and foremost. If you're trying to find a doctor, COVID's a great litmus test. So interview them, see how they feel. There are a lot more like-minded doctors out there. They're just not on social media. You just got to do your research and find out. And then if in terms of, you know, you can't say this about every independent doctor, because there's certainly a lot of independent doctors that attacked me. So, but if you can find a doctor who's sort of outside the system, they're less likely to be a total conformist with the public health system. And yeah, I tell people, if you can afford it, try to do a direct primary care doctor who it's like paying for a gym membership. Like it's a monthly fee and you get more access, you get more time with your doctor, and you know, use your insurance for more catastrophic issues like cancer or trauma, that sort of thing.
So this next question is pretty similar, but I know even today you've mentioned a few times how you're a mother. And a lot of the people I work with now are either pregnant or new moms. And basically the same as the question, advice to patients, but specifically for pregnant or new mothers. Any advice? Because a lot of them are really pressured to take some of these injections. A lot of them are, I mean, it's really scary. Even when you look at things like diapers that have the PFAS forever chemicals on there and some of the drinks. And I'm pretty sure as an ENT, I'm assuming work with infants who commonly have ENT issues. So any advice there?
Yeah, I do not envy young mothers right now because of all the things we've seen. I mean, I sort of went blindly through my pregnancies without questioning, but luckily they weren't, you know, trying to inject me with things while I was pregnant. But that's sort of a newer thing. And even, I don't know if you saw the FDA just put a warning label on the RSV shot for pregnant women, saying that there's an increased risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is scary. So I would say, as a pregnant mother, avoid any of those shots that they're trying to give you. And, you know, it's tough with these childhood vaccines, but personally, I would hold off on any vaccines till we have all the data. Now, hopefully, Robert F. Kennedy will get to the bottom of all that. And I don't have the same concerns. It's not to the same degree as the COVID shots. I think the COVID shots are far more dangerous. But I think when you look at all these vaccines taken collectively and giving 6 shots in one visit, and I think that's very worrisome So if you are inclined to give them, I would at least space them out so that there's not this massive immune challenge in a single visit. And when my kids were little, if they were sick at all, like if they had any hint of an illness, I did not get them any shots that day. I waited till they were healthy. But personally, I would hold off on anything till we have more data.
Yeah, I really feel for expecting and new mothers because they're so vulnerable. There's all these decisions they have to make and they're influenced by people we're supposed to trust, really. And as we've seen in the data, many times that decision to take those injections can lead to some pretty catastrophic consequences. There's a good book that I was pleasantly surprised with how good it was. Have you ever read the Vaccine Friendly Plan by Jennifer Margulis?
No.
So, I mean, with the title, you'd think it was written by Peter Hotez, but it seems to be more of like the title's like a Trojan horse almost. Because when you actually look at the book, it very reasonably lays out the schedule, the implications of the schedule, the ingredients, some of the risks and considerations around the ingredients. There are some instances where it says, you know, this, I forget which one, but like this vaccine might be good, but there are also clear instances where it says, like, you probably want to avoid this one over here. So,
good. I'll check it out.
Yeah. Vaccine friendly plan. Now, I know we're getting close to time here, so I just have a few questions left and, you know, very important topic. Would you mind updating us on your case with the Texas Medical Board?
Yeah, so that's been going on for over 3 years now. And basically, it's not patient-driven complaints. It's two hospitals that complained against me. It's been lumped into this one case. When Methodist Hospital went after me, I resigned. They turned me in because they said I resigned while under investigation. Well, the spirit of that is, you know, if I were being investigated for harming a patient and then I just decided to up and resign and flee, then that's why you would report somebody to the medical board. But I resigned in protest because of the way they treated me. And, you know, they permanently ruined my reputation. So that's one complaint. And then the other one, at the same time, this was the fall of 2021, I had a wife of a dying man reach out to me because she wanted him to get ivermectin in the hospital. And she was suing because the hospital wouldn't let him. And so she asked me to be the expert witness. And so I testified and we won the case. The court was ordered to grant me temporary privileges, allow him to get the ivermectin. There was a lot of back and forth after that decision. And it became, you know, the hospital stalled and there had to be meetings with the judge after the decision. But I got the green light to go ahead. And so we sent the nurse there. The nurse was greeted by the police and the hospital administrator turned away. But turns out the hospital got a stay on the order, but we were not informed of that. I was not informed of that. But they turned me in, making it sound like I just, you know, barged in there trying to give him ivermectin without permission. So that they offered to make it all go away. I had this informal conference and they said, well, you can pay $5,000 and take 8 hours of CME and retake the jurisprudence exam. So I refused. And so now it's going to the State Office of Administrative Hearings, but there have been multiple continuances. It's been a saga. And the hearing is not now, it's the end of April. So.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
It sounds like they tried to set you up.
That's what my lawyers think, actually, because the communication sort of broke down right during the stay and it went to somebody it wouldn't normally have gone to. It went to so they think that, yeah, it was sort of we can screw it to her.
Well, with all these attacks, I mentioned before the recording, I mentioned this to you. I mean, it must be very stressful. Do you have any practices that you put into place to help deal with all this stress?
No, I mean, I just, you know, day by day, I have some hobbies. I don't get to do them as much as I'd like to, but.
What's your favorite hobby?
Well, I love skiing, but obviously I can't. I mean, I live in Texas, so I started taking violin lessons and I found that kind of helpful. Just something totally distracting from the grind, play pickleball.
Nice. That's cool. Well, in your last answer, you mentioned giving ivermectin to patients. You know, I think most people who are awake know now that ivermectin can be effective against COVID. But one thing that some people might not be aware of is that there are these studies and stories coming out about ivermectin possibly treating cancer or curing cancer in apparently some cases. Have you seen any of this?
Yeah, I've had a few patients come to me wanting help, and I have helped a few. I have not seen the miraculous recovery that others are reporting, though, but I also don't have an extensive amount of experience doing that. So I think it's sounds promising, but I personally haven't seen it, you know, work miracles yet.
Yeah, I didn't pay much attention to it. I mean, I figured it could be plausible, but it wasn't until people started coming up to me. They know I have a show and I talk about this stuff and they say, you know, I have a friend who had cancer and they started using ivermectin and now they're 100% better. And that's what I was like. And the people telling me this, by the way, are people who thought I was crazy at the beginning of the pandemic talking about, you know, the stuff we've been talking about. So it does seem that it's having an impact enough to reach people who maybe aren't awake at all. So I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said, whatever it takes.
Right. Yeah. Well, is there anything else that we have not yet talked about today that maybe we should?
Yeah, I know I'll think of something, but I feel like we've covered most everything. I don't know. What are your thoughts on, you seem to be pretty outspoken about the means. What are your, you think that they're as nefarious as Jack Cruz thinks they are?
Well, I'll be honest. At first, no. And, you know, like I said, I had mixed feelings. I really tried to give him the benefit of the doubt. I thought he was very well spoken. I thought a lot of what he said was reasonable, which is what a good propagandist would do. So there's still that skepticism there. But then, like I said, as he got into some of those really contradictory things, like it's a war crime, but I think people should still have the choice to poison themselves with this war crime. For me, that was like the nail in the coffin, where I still don't know if, as you put it, like if he's basically a useful idiot and he doesn't know exactly what's going on and he's doing what he thinks is right. I don't know if he's an evil, nefarious person who's really like playing the game well. I don't know. I think the other possibility that has not been discussed as much is that he basically is functionally a politician. So like a politician would, I think, need to be careful in their approach. Like he very well could know all this stuff. I think firmly he could personally have the belief that these things should be pulled from the market. But hypothetically, if RFK Jr. is saying like, look, we need to be careful about how we get this message out. Mm-hmm. Keep your mouth shut until you get the green light, and then you can say certain things. And it's almost like, I was saying about this, it's almost like sales. Like if I'm trying to sell you on something you don't even know you have the problem yet, you know, then in sales, they call that problem unaware. You don't want to say to somebody like, hey, I have this product that's the answer to your problems. Well, it's not going to be effective because they don't know they have that problem yet. So it could, I think in terms of a propaganda, if the good guys are using good propaganda to get all this stuff out, I think it could kind of be like a sales funnel where it's like, first, we need to make them aware of the problem, which is a very delicate process because they've all been poisoned and it'll freak people out if they know they've been poisoned. So we have to control that first. Then once they're aware, then we can move on to the next phase where we start to actually, you know, I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, and you know, yes, but I've had two or three private conversations with Callie and he could have told me all that and I would have said, oh, that makes sense. And I would have backed off. Right. If he had said that to me, he could have convinced me that I was going down the wrong path privately and he did not.
Hmm. Doesn't look good. Well, Dr. Mary Tally Bowden, where can people find out more about you and the work that you do?
Well, my website is breathemd.org, and my X handle is mdbreathe. And then I have a Substack, which I call Day 8.
I will put all the links in the show notes. Folks, I highly suggest you follow her on X, click the links in the show notes, but also stay healthy, stay awake. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Please remember to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple, or if you're watching this on Rumble or YouTube, please be sure to give us a thumbs up and leave a comment down below. Let us know what you thought, or if you had any questions based on what we talked about in this episode. And of course, it couldn't hurt to share it with your friends, those who maybe are awake, or those, of course, who are waking up. Thanks again. Stay healthy. Stay awake.